Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday, March 25th. Currently, we've got 36 degrees here in Old Town Park City. National weather, 37 degrees. 37 degrees also in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Cedric Hayes. I got it out. Good morning.
Yeah, you got it out. Hey, we got time. I like it. Very specific. Good morning, Leslie. And hey, we've got some nice weather. If you like yesterday, we've got more of that, if not a little better, as we go into the coming days. So expect nothing but sunshine as we go throughout today. That's the best part about it. But don't forget that sunscreen. SPF 15 or greater, you can burn in less than 15 minutes. You don't want to do that. So keep that in mind. But otherwise, temperatures, oh my, we're talking about a nice taste of spring. High temperatures today in Park City climbing to around 60 degrees this afternoon. The Heber Valley, we're talking about lots of sunshine and highs climbing into the mid to upper 60s across the area. So it is going to be a very, very nice afternoon out there for us. Now, so going to tonight, we're looking at clear skies. We'll see those light winds. So clear skies, light winds, that's a perfect recipe to allow for that heat to escape in the atmosphere during the overnight hours. And we'll see those temperatures dropping back down into the 30s. But we're only talking upper 30s for both Park City and the Heber Valley as we go throughout tonight. Now, as we go into your Wednesday, we're going to be looking at that sunshine during your afternoon hours with high temperatures on Wednesday climbing into the mid-60s in Park City. Yeah, the mid-60s. The Heber Valley, we're going to do a little better. We're talking high temperatures climbing into the lower 70s out there, so a very nice taste of spring. As we get into your Thursday, we'll start to see those winds picking up out of the south. That'll keep those morning low temperatures on Thursday down into only the mid-40s for morning low temperatures to kick off the day. And as we go into the afternoon hours, highs will be back in the mid-60s in Park City and highs in the low 70s there in the Heber Valley. We will see a few more clouds on the increase by late in the day on Thursday. But for the first half of the day, not too bad at all. Now, Thursday night, we start to see more changes moving in. We'll see those clouds thickening up across the area with overnight lows into the 30s. And as we go into your Friday, we're looking at high temperatures climbing only into the mid-40s there in Park City. And yes, we'll have a chance of off and on scattered snow showers developing in the Park City area as we go into your Friday afternoon. As we get into the Heber Valley, we'll have a chance of a few rain showers developing with temperatures climbing into the mid-50s. And then as we get into the weekend on your Saturday, I think a good chance of snow showers for both Park City and in the Heber Valley as we see those temperatures dropping back off. Overnight low temperatures in Park City by the time we get towards your Saturday in the upper 20s will be around the upper 20s to low 30s in the Heber Valley. Highs will only be in the low to mid 40s for us on our Saturday with, again, off and on scattered snow showers. Didn't like a major storm in terms of amounts, but we could see some light accumulations, but more so just the fact that we're going to be talking about snowflakes flying after temperatures in the 60s and 70s will be kind of a shock. And then as we get into your Sunday, we'll have a dry day, temperatures in the upper 40s in Park City, 50s for the Heber Valley, and another chance of rain and snow showers returning for the beginning of next week across the area. So, Leslie, yes, we are going up and up with these temperatures, but eventually they go down and down again.
Okay. Cedric, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Shadow, we have Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So yesterday was relatively quiet in the backcountry. There was only one reported soft slab of wind-drifted snow. This was in the upper days drainage as well. By the afternoon, with the warm temperatures, Ski Patrol did start to report some wet loose activity, but the elevated winds and cloud cover did seem to keep the wet snow at bay for most of the day. Today, the wet snow is going to be the primary concern, though. That March sun is strong, and we're entering a period of poor overnight refreezes. A lot of the central Wasatch did see a freeze overnight, but not all of the Park City ridgeline. So regardless of the wind speed, we can expect wet loose avalanches, roof slides, and gloppy snow on easterly, southerly, and westerly aspects today. As well as we're starting to move into these days of poor refreeze, we could start to see larger wet slab avalanches. It might not happen today, but it should remain on our radar. These avalanches occur when the water percolates through the snowpack for the first time of the season. There's several layers within our snowpack that we've been talking about over the last few months. Those could now cause the water to pool, making this a concern in the coming days. So the bottom line for wet avalanches, get out there early, get home early, and you want to avoid slopes steeper than 35 degrees when the snow becomes wet and unsupportable to your weight. So even a small slide could be dangerous today, and the avalanche danger is going to likely rise to considerable on those west, south, and east-facing slopes.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. We'll take a look at the agenda for Wednesday's County Council meeting. Parkite Mayoral Van Der Merwe and Hillary Hamilton, the Director of Donor Relations for the InterScience Research Fund, will have details about an upcoming fundraiser here in Park City on Saturday. And finally, Recycle Utah General Manager Jim Bedell will have the latest on the location for a new recycling center. Also, just a heads up that Summit County and Recycle Utah are both financial supporters of KPCW. Taking a look at some local news now, a major redevelopment project that would transform the center of Park City will be back in front of city planners this week. KPCW's Parkamella Testa reports.
On Wednesday, plans to demolish and redevelop the Doubletree Hotel, also known as the Yarrow, will return to the Park City Planning Commission for a potential vote. In October last year, a majority of commissioners said they were not in favor of allowing a 10-foot height exception for the project at the intersection of Kearns Boulevard and Park Avenue. At that time, a lawyer for the property owner, Singerman Real Estate, said the project was likely dead due to the commission's opposition. Singerman wants to demolish the decades-old hotel to make way for a modern mixed-use development. Buildings would be up to 45 feet tall and include a condo hotel, affordable housing, and retail and office space. The proposal exceeds the city zoning 35-foot height limit. The Planning Commission is actively reviewing new building code for the Bonanza Park neighborhood that would allow building heights up to 45 feet under certain exceptions. For example, if a project provides more affordable housing than required under the city's affordable housing resolution. Additionally, the proposed code changes limit hotel uses because the city's small area plan for Bonanza Park identifies the neighborhood as a place for locals with housing for long-term residents. The new code has not been approved yet, so it's not in effect. A staff report written by Park City planning staff for Wednesday's meeting recommends a denial of the project because it still does not comply with the existing code. But the commission could also approve the proposed project with conditions that outline required modifications. The report says the building heights have not been modified from the previous proposal, but there were changes to the retail square footage and parking. Wednesday's meeting begins at 5:30 p.m. at City Hall. The agenda and a link to attend virtually can be found online at kpcw.org. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Summit County Council meets tomorrow, starting at the Summit County Justice Center at 1:15. That before traveling to the county courthouse in Colville. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council will spend about an hour at the Justice Center to do what exactly?
Oh, just to look at the progress on the remodel. That's a very extensive, sometimes we say remodel in an effort to downplay what's going on there, but it's a very extensive expansion of the sheriff's office and the attorney's office. It was critically needed. The expansion portion is what we're going to be looking at, right? And it should be done by December. So we've got walls to look at. It might be take a little tour. And then once the expansion portion is done, the sheriff's office and the attorney's office will move into that new portion of the building, and then they'll remodel what they're in now. So it's going well. It's within budget. It took us a long time to get there with different site work issues, but it's ready to go.
Yeah. So how much was budgeted for this?
I think the overall for all parts is about around $24 million. And if you remember, we had some different plans in that area with general community services, county services building before that went into the $30 million range. The council was unhappy with those exceeding numbers. So we've pared this back to what was actually critical, and that was the sheriff's office and attorney's office.
Yeah, so did you get any funding from the state? I know like Wasatch County, but that's to do their courthouse. So this sounds like it's outside the court.
I think it is. We did have a bond that we had already pulled that we used some of those existing funds for, but I don't think we got anything as far as grant goes for this building.
And how much space is it adding?
I want to say it's 25,000 square feet as well, but the 24 million, I believe, is the number for the dollars and 25,000 square feet.
Okay. And we've heard how crowded it is at the Quinns Junction, the health department and People's Health Clinic. Is that next, providing space for the health department, or perhaps a new location for?
It's definitely on the radar. If you go over there and try and park, it's really a challenge during certain hours of the day. We still do have the Skullcandy building that we're working on exactly how we will operate that building, whether Skullcandy will be there with us or if we have an opportunity to have the whole building to ourselves down the road. So we are planning out for the future. I don't think anything's imminent with People's Health and the Health Department, but it's not critical yet, but it's a real challenge on a daily basis there in the space.
Yeah, and I know the location for People's Health Clinic is critical just because it's so close to the hospital there. But is there some underground agreement, though, that the health department has to be there because of the land acquisition?
Yes, there's something that's tied to the bill. That we own the building. The land is owned by IHC, and there is an agreement there that there has to be either a health-related business or a nonprofit. And so, like, let's say if we wanted to leave that building, we could only sell it to someone that could use it for a similar service. People's Health Clinic could purchase it, IHC could purchase it, but you can't just come in there and have some kind of a business do it. So that those are the challenges of that building. But maybe that's not a good problem to have when we're glad we're meeting some of the needs of the community. We're glad that people are using that space, and especially People's Health Clinic does such a wonderful job in providing such a valuable service to the community. But of course, we wish that less people needed to use that service, but we're glad they're utilizing it, and I think they're expanding hours and doing some things that they're really reaching the community well.
Yeah. All right, so after traveling to Colville, the County Council will open its work session with a discussion on the arts and the status of the Summit County Arts and Culture Master Plan. Was this something that the Arts Council asked to be, to make this presentation, or?
Yes, I think this is about a month, I think on her slides it said month 6 of 8 in this process, so we're nearing the end. I think she wanted to update the council on what to expect and as far as adopting a plan or, this is kind of a follow-up to what it was referred to as the ABC plan a couple of years ago. And I think some people have said where it fell flat is there were some really specific funding requests that came out of that plan. I think that scared a lot of our elected officials, probably in both Park City and Summit County. So I think Jocelyn's taken a little softer approach to this. She's had myself and Dan Compton and Candace Hart all very involved in this process, so we can speak to this as well. I think there's going to be some financial resource options for us. I think there's going to be some policy measure recommendations, some things like that we can do. And I think we have an opportunity to step up a little bit in art in our community. I think that's something our community will embrace, and I think we have a lot of opportunities all around us to reflect our culture and heritage, or whether that's mining or our native folks. I think there's a lot of things we can do here.
All right, then at 4:20, a discussion on the draft Kimball Junction Environmental Impact Statement. Is UDOT making this presentation?
Yes, I think Becky with UDOT is on there, as well as Carl. He will probably weigh in. Carl is our transportation director. So this is a process been many months in the making. Their recommendation is going to be for alternative C. Doesn't come as a major surprise. It's got some positives, of course, and we've been very involved in the discussions as going forward. I think at this point we are trying best to advocate for what we need and want in that area, while at the same time not trying to get in the way of this process. This process, we need to see it through. We need to get to an alternative that we can start talking about, advocating for funding, and we're planning on doing that. I think there's a couple of open houses as part of this draft EIS that we hope folks will attend.
So does this alternative C need to be approved by County Council?
I don't believe so. I don't think there is any action that they take to adopt this. I think it's completely in UDOT's purview.
Yeah, and what do you think? I mean, is the county happy with UDOT's choice in managing Kimball Junction traffic? Certainly the least expensive option.
Yes. And I think there's still some opportunities. Again, we're trying so hard not to get in the way of this process. I think we have some parts of alternative A that we still like, coming off of Landmark, maybe a separate feeder from I-80, I-15. But in the end of the day, we need to just get this process done, and we're looking forward to that. And I think at that point we can start to advocate, especially for funding. And with the Olympics and things coming like that, I think we can really get this moved up on the STIP much sooner than we normally would have.
Right. So, does the Dakota Pacific Real Estate Development Agreement offer more than what UDOT's proposing?
I don't think so. They have offered to advocate with us on, as you know, much of their development agreement amendment was tied to phasing on the Kimball Junction EIS. So as it's funded, as it's shovels in the ground, all those things triggered different aspects of the Dakota Pacific entitlement. So they have a lot to advocate with us about, but I don't think that there's anything that they have specifically. I'm trying to remember in the PPP or the public-private partnership, if there's any aspect of that that would be related to the EIS.
And will alternative C really make a difference in traffic going forward? I mean, we're going to be adding more cars. I mean, does it just give us more of what we've got?
Well, when you say we're adding more cars, do you mean because of Dakota Pacific?
Well, just over the years.
Oh, sure, sure. I think we're always behind the eight ball here with adding in people to our community, whether that's for work or for play. This does add a dedicated turning lane. I think that will make a big difference. There's some real major upgrades with Ute and Olympic improvements there. But at the same time, we have a lot of people that are trying to get to our community at the same time. And I think at some point we do need to recognize that traffic's probably never going to be like it was in 1988. And that's just and that's true of throughout the state of Utah. If you've traveled anywhere over the last 10, 15 years, I haven't gone to Utah County in the last 15 years where there hasn't been construction going on I-15. It's just a mess. And I grew up in St. George where I used to, now when I come back home to Park City on Sunday from St. George, it's bumper to bumper, and things are not getting better, and we've got to do all we can to mitigate that. And I will say that the Dakota Pacific project, moving from a tech park to a residential, would help traffic. That's not going to make traffic worse. That's going to make traffic better than if they built a bunch of tech centers where we're importing a bunch of folks from Salt Lake to work there. So I'm hoping that somebody someday in Dakota Pacific and other places in our community can wake up and go to work and walk to work, and they can walk to the coffee shop, and they can walk to Smith's. That's really what our effort is going to be.
All right. Comments are being accepted on this through April 28. Do they come to the county or they go right to UDOT?
They go right to UDOT.
All right. And you have that kind of on the website where people can...
Yes. And there's an open house on April 8th at Ecker. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an open house on April 10th. That's just virtual, just a Zoom. So we encourage people to check that out as well.
Okay. And what's the status of the BRT, the bus rapid transit lanes on 224? Again, we had seen a couple of Park City officials not happy about the widening there as we came into city limits.
Yeah, I mean, we're still hoping that we can come to some kind of consensus on BRT all the way into town. There was a meeting actually yesterday afternoon that I was not a part of that I'd like to hear more about with Summit County and Park City officials. But we're just trying to work together and to collaborate on this. It's the situation that's really challenging from my perspective is that this has been, I think it's been 12 years in the making. Mm-hmm. And every time we have new elected officials, we need to start over and we need to talk about, and that's the nature of the beast. That's how things work. But it is challenging when somebody's been here for 12 years and we've moved a lot. We've spent millions of dollars. We've really gone forward with this project. So we're hoping that we can continue and we can listen to Park City's concerns and mitigate them as best we can without jeopardizing the project.
All right. Wanted to ask you we've got Recycle Utah General Manager Jim Bedell coming in later this hour to talk a little bit about the update on what's happening with the recycling center. I know that you, the county, and the city have been meeting with Recycle Utah. From the county's perspective, I mean, what needs to happen?
Well, our effort has been to try to provide a place for Recycle Utah to land outside of Munchkin. They've got to get off of that parcel. I think they've been given a date of September of next year to be off of that. So we've been trying to provide them for some land to be able to do some of their services, whether that's the exact same services they're doing at Munchkin, or then at the same time they've gone through this master planning process where it's kind of showing that they have some other needs that they need to meet, whether that's a hub and spoke model. They've got some other ways they want to go about this. And ultimately, they're looking for a partnership. They're looking for Park City and Summit County to partner with them on solutions. We're interested in that as well. This is something we do also. We have, you know, recycle cans. We do this as a landfill operation. So we're trying to go about this from our perspective to say, what can we do? We know we need to do better. We're grateful for Recycle Utah and not only all that they do, but specifically in this instance, how they've kind of called out diversion rates are really low. We've got to do better with some of those things. And if we truly have a council in Summit County that wants to do better, we need to do better. And finally, I will say it's a little bit exciting this time. We've done this a master planning process. I think it was in 2018 that just kind of fell flat with the landfill and recycling because of funding. And now we have access to TRT funds that can be used for this. We have the emergency services sales tax. Everyone that voted for that, I think we're going to do better with recycling because of those funding sources. So that's kind of an exciting process. And then I think Recycle Utah is in a. I'm interested to hear your interview with Jim, because they're in a not in flux, but they're trying to find what their next step is, having to vacate that property and what do they look like. And I think in 5 years they'll look vastly different than they do today.
Okay, at 9 a.m. we're going to see the last batch of referendum signatures being posted on the Lieutenant Governor's site. This is for the referendum again against the decision Summit County Council made with regard to Dakota Pacific. I mean, last I looked, we were about 3,200 signatures. The organizers of the referendum, the sponsors of the referendum, say that they are convinced they have enough signatures. So is Summit County at this point bracing for a lawsuit?
Well, we're not going to do anything until we hear about it. I think there will likely be some dispute, whether it be the packets and numbers of signatures. I know that Eve in the clerk's office will only verify those signatures that came in valid packets, and that may be in dispute. At the same time, I know that Dakota Pacific has reached out to our community development department as part of SB 26,
yeah.
and they're. They haven't moved forward, but they're talking about their next steps as far as that entitlement goes. So those two things are happening simultaneously, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
All right. And just wanted to ask you, any updates on the redistricting bill that Summit County would have to go to districts? I know Wasatch County Council sent letters asking the governor not to or to veto it.
Yeah. We've done the same thing. I shouldn't probably say this out loud, but there was talk of whether we should leave Wasatch to do that for us. They were probably included in this bill in error, and so maybe they have more could carry the water for both of us. But we'd have advocated as well for a veto, at least sending it back to the Senate and the House for another vote, one in which we could potentially advocate for some changes to that bill. We will continue to do so, and we still don't like how it happened, and I probably talk about it every day with somebody, and it's a very unfortunate situation, and we'll make the best of what we will have to do, but it's a real challenge.
So at this point, the governor has not signed it?
I don't believe he signed it yet.
Okay. Shane, anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Nice to see you, Leslie. Thank you.
Well, an upcoming fundraiser to benefit the InterScience Research Fund will be held this weekend. In the studio to tell us more, I have Park City resident and event organizer Meryl Verma, and then on the phone from the InterScience Research Fund is Hillary Hamilton. She serves as the Director of Donor Relations. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hillary, do we
have
you?
Good morning.
There she is.
Yes.
Hillary, why don't you start and just tell us about the Inner Science Research Fund. What is it? What does it do?
Well, I'd be happy to share that with you. So over the last couple of years, we started Inner Science Research Fund to support the analysis of data on meditation and how it changes your biology and physiology. And we've been looking at Dr. Joe Dispenza's work, and he has been collecting data over the last several years on over 9,000 participants. And he doesn't just look at a small amount of what's happening in the human body. He looks at many different things. He looks at blood, saliva, the microbiome, urine. He looks at EEG, so brainwave activity, heart rate variability. He even looks at breast milk. And you would not believe the changes that are happening when people are in a meditative state. It's putting the body back into balance. It's taking people out of the survival mechanism and putting them into a state of coherence and a state of homeostasis. And that's when the body can heal. So what we're finding, and our grant recipient is UC San Diego, and they're one of the biggest medical schools in the country. And what they're finding is the healing comes from within. So we're going to be showing the documentary this weekend in Park City. And the name of our documentary is Source, It's Within You. So there's a lot of science. There's a lot of testimonials. People are healing from all different types of conditions because when they go into a state of balance, their body begins to heal. So it's all based on neuroscience and Dr. Joe Dispenza's work. And Inner Science Research Fund is cutting edge. And this is the new healthcare that we're presenting.
So is Dr. Joe Dispenza part of this nonprofit, or you're just using his research?
We are looking at his data. So he collects the data at different research events, and we fund the analysis of all that data, and our grant recipient is UC San Diego. So we look at other forms of meditation, but mainly it's his because he's making the biggest impact in people's lives, just like with what happened with Marilyn, her healing journey story.
Well, let's talk, bring Marilyn into it. How did you get involved with this nonprofit, Marilyn?
Well, I was, it's not hugely public, but in 2020, I was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer and BRCA gene positive. So that kind of, as you can imagine, put my world into a spin. And I had a girlfriend who had recommended I look Dr. Joe Dispenza up, and his retreats sell out in 10 minutes, but she was able to pull some strings and get me in. So early of 2021, I attended one of the retreats, and it was a huge part of my healing journey and definitely played a role in my, ultimately in my prognosis, but also in the treatment choice that I took. It was a hybrid choice. I did Western as well as using the formula and the meditation practice from Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Okay, and so why does having a fundraiser here in Park City make sense?
I think the reason why, I'll talk first and you can follow up on this, Marilyn. I really appreciate Meryl stepping up and bringing us to Park City. The reason why we want to come to Park City is because there's a lot of thought leaders in Park City and people that want to make a difference in the healthcare system. And I believe that there's a lot of people there that want to leave a legacy. What Dr. Joe is bringing to the world is a transformation in health. And these thought leaders, the difference between what we're doing and what's happening in healthcare right now is the difference between when we had horseback and we transitioned into the steam engine. What Dr. Joe's presenting at his events is we're seeing people change within 1 week, not only their microbiome and the rest of their biology, but their facial expressions change, their voice changes. We're able to identify a lot of different diseases just by what we're capturing. And we've captured over 60 different diseases and over 9,000 participants in the last few years. And so just the data that we're collecting is just astronomical. And we have the biggest data set in meditation in the world. In fact, Dr. Joe was just brought by private plane to the Vatican, to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, where he presented his research, and they showed the documentary there. So we're cutting edge, and we're about 25 to 30 years above what everybody else is studying. And the reason why our nonprofit is so popular and why we're doing so well is because it's people like Meryl who had a transformation in their health, and all they want to do is give back and get this out to the world, because the world really deserves to know that health doesn't come from the outside in, it comes from the inside out, and that's what we're demonstrating.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience with this?
Yeah, I had an incredibly positive experience, and I just feel when I, you know, I could only talk so much, but when they, Melissa Tittle, who was the filmmaker, we brought the source out, and I viewed it and I thought, wow, this is incredibly inspirational. It has a message of hope, and I've seen through the retreats the work, not just within my own journey, but, you know, many variations of a diagnosis, but specifically cancer patients. And going through my journey at Huntsman, I just feel that I feel called to provide that hope and to spread the message, and that's why it was so important for me to reach out to you, Leslie, and I really am grateful for that, because, you know, we are airing the source here this Saturday on March 29th at the Jim Santee Auditorium, and it's a large theater, and that's exciting because that just means more seats, more people that can see the documentary, and more lives that can be impacted through this message of hope. And it is, like I say, it's not saying one or the other. It's not saying East or West. And that was a huge sort of conundrum for me during my treatment, you know, decision-making process. And there's no right or wrong way. It's just, why not do it both? And how, I don't want to use the word easy, because it was not easy going through 6 months of chemo and 25 rounds of radiation and a year of reconstruction, but it certainly helped tremendously, meditating anywhere from 1 to 3 hours a day, and having that sort of almost like a blankie, like a baby's blankie is the analogy I'm getting right now. And it just was so helpful in the entire process. Mm. Yeah.
So you mentioned the fundraiser on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I know there's a few options. Maybe somebody can run through those.
Sure. We have different donation tiers, and the fundraiser is in two parts. So we actually have the screening, which will be held at the Jim Santee at 2 p.m. on Saturday. We then have confirmed that Hillary will be joining us, as well as Dr. Hamill, who Hillary can speak more to him and the importance of having him join us in person, because we will be having a Q&A at the end of that screening. We will then move 5 to 7 minutes away to a beautiful property here in Park City that has been donated by the Whedon family. And this is a beautiful renovated property that is going to be new for the event, spaces and options in Park City. And they were very generous to donate the barn to us for this fundraiser. So that's super exciting. So, and that starts at 5 o'clock. So that'll be all on the same day.
All right. And we'll get the website where people can register then, and we'll put that in the link into the interview.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. There's several ways to find it, but I would invite you to go to sourcethefilm.org. There is a link to the Park City fundraiser. You can then go in on that and take a look at the different tiers. But Hillary, maybe you can mention kind of...
We're going to bring some art that was created by Mr. Brainwash and Dr. Joe in collaboration. We're going to bring that. We're super excited. And Meryl is the example of truth. And we want to just share more of what we've experienced and what different testimonials are in the documentary. Dr. Hamill, who is the vice chair of research at UC San Diego, he's going to be there answering questions. We can share with you the latest research and what's going on and the different findings that we've uncovered through the analysis of all the data. So we're really excited about being with you guys.
Yeah. I got to ask, just because I just happened to see it a couple of weeks ago, the series Apple Cider Vinegar, right, about how there were two people in that film that died because they were convinced that green drinks and coffee enemas would, you know, and some woo-woo stuff happening in the Mexican jungle would cure them of cancer without going through the traditional, conventional medical procedures. So I understand meditation is not green drinks, but maybe you can talk just a little bit about, are you giving
Absolutely.
Very sick people false hope or...
No, not at all. We're not saying this is the answer for everyone, but what we are teaching people and what we see through evidence and what we see through hundreds, if not thousands, of testimonials is once we change and move out of a state of survival. So a lot of us, we think 60 to 70,000 thoughts per day. And of those 60 to 70,000 thoughts per day, 95% of those thoughts are the same thoughts we thought the day before. And if those thoughts are not loving to us and we're living in a state of survival, if we're thinking thoughts based on fear or frustration or anger that are in survival, our body is like going like a sports car going 60 miles an hour in first gear. It's going to break down eventually. So we teach people how to change how they think, how they act, and how they feel, and tune into elevated emotions like love, joy, compassion, gratitude. And these elevated emotions help balance the body out. Ideas don't leave your body. So we have 60 to 70 trillion cells in our body or more, and they're all spying on what we're thinking. They're creating chemicals in our body based on our thoughts. So what the meditation practice does is help balance out those thoughts, actions, and feelings into something that's more loving to you. And that's what we're finding, that going through a week-long event, we have about 30 hours of meditation. And during that meditation, you're getting beyond yourself. You're letting go of those habitual thoughts, feelings, and actions, and you're creating that balance back into your body, is back into homeostasis. So it's really incredible what we're finding, and that's why we're wanting to come to your area and share the data with you guys and share the research and listen to what we're finding, because we really believe that the world deserves to know that the power within you is pretty strong.
Okay, and people that take up another tier or two, they'll get a lot more information.
Absolutely. It's very clear in there what it is. We would love to be able to share the Wheaton Ranch with you. It is absolutely stunning. You know, what I've been saying to everybody is come for the party and leave with community.
Okay. Hillary, anything else you wanted to add?
I just really appreciate you allowing us to come on your show this morning and share this information with your community. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Meryl?
Yeah, thank you so much again. Super grateful. And it's great to see you again.
Okay, Meryl Van Rare and Hillary Hamilton, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it. Joining me now in studio with an update from Recycle Utah, General Manager Jim Bedell. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Leslie. Great to be here this morning.
So last week, Recycle Utah had a follow-up meeting with both Park City and Summit County leaders about the future of recycling here in Summit County. Bring us up to date.
Sure. I think we had some very productive meetings. We've got a nice senior group of officials from both the city and the county, including the mayor and another council member and senior staff at the city, the chair of the county council and another council member there, senior people from Recycle Utah, including a couple of board members, Carolyn and myself. And I'm cautiously optimistic that we're making some progress here. The result of the last meeting, I think, was an agreement that we all are committed to improving our diversion rate. The next critical step will be what we do about that.
All right. Well, I think that's what you guys decided to do, was to work on this plan together to improve landfill diversion. We know from the strategic planning Recycle did Utah did last year, that number is at 12%. How much can you realistically improve given our tourist economy and the fact that recycling pickup only happens every other week? You're just not going to get the tourist or the short-term rentals, you know, willing to recycle.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're quite as, sorry, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but pessimistic about that. When you look at other similar communities to ours have done, especially in the Mountain West and even across the country, diversion rates are up in the 30%, and they face a lot of the similar problems that we do. So we're quite optimistic that with the right investment in infrastructure, education, that we can, let me put it this way, there's no reason we can't get to those same type of rates that these other communities have already achieved.
Yeah. Is it the tourists or is it just our local restaurants?
I think it's everybody. I mean, what we suffer from here and what we learned pretty clearly as a result of the study we commissioned and the conversations we had is other communities have made investments in infrastructure. And the biggest component of that, and the most important one, is the ability to do a better job of collecting materials. And the lesson we learned is if you make it easier and more convenient and less expensive for businesses, visitors, locals to divert material from the landfill, they'll do it.
Well, and for those of us that get our recycling picked up every other week, it is easy. But again, is it enough for, again, when we start to look at the short-term rentals and the restaurants? I mean, they don't have the room to store recycling for 2 weeks.
Exactly, and that's where the ability to collect in a more flexible way plays right in. We've had lots of conversations with local businesses, and I'm looking behind you here right at Main Street, where there's not a lot of space. And fortunately, we have one person in particular who sits on our board who operates a business here and is very, very knowledgeable about the difficulties of storing material. Part of what a good diversion infrastructure allows you to do is pick up more frequently, pick up in smaller containers, and thus make it easier for people who are space constrained.
Yeah, and what do we have now? We have somebody come down Main Street that you got to haul your own stuff too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not easy. I mean, you have to make a conscious, you know, decision that I'm going to haul this stuff out every, you know, Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, yeah.
So whose responsibility is that?
I think it's a community's responsibility to be able to build the capacity for people to do the right thing. Right? And part of what, you know, we've learned is there's no simple answer to, you know, how do you collect more efficiently from tourists, from small businesses. But the one essential thing that we're really focused on is you have to have the ability to collect material, bring it someplace nearby, which makes it cheaper, you know, properly store it, compile it into larger shipments, and properly dispose of it. If you don't have that, you know, you're reliant on what we have right now, which is some businesses spend a lot more money and time than they really should because they truly care about this. There are probably plenty of others who care about it, but we could make it much easier for them by providing that infrastructure.
So what is the plan then to do that? I mean, you're going to meet monthly? Is that the idea?
Well, a couple of things came out of the last meeting. One is the good news is, and, you know, again, we're cautiously optimistic. I think we've all agreed that we do have a problem and we want to act on it. The challenge now is getting that action in place. You know, we put forth a proposal based on the research we did. It's our proposal. And unfortunately, we don't have the resources to execute it. So I think the next step is for the county and the city to digest that, perhaps come up with alternative proposals that work more in their context.
All right. I heard from Shane Scott earlier that the goal is to have Recycle Utah out of its current location by September of next year. Is that doable?
Yeah. We will be leaving our spot next summer.
All right. And where are you going?
Well, the right long-term solution, not necessarily just for us as an organization, but for the diversion that we do, is to a nice big infrastructure facility, you know, someplace out of town. I don't think that's going to be ready by next summer. So one of the very positive things we agreed last Thursday was we formed a small working group of operations people. Our Director of Operations Troy Holding will be involved. We have some great people from both the county and the city, and we're tasked with coming up with an interim plan so that once we do leave next summer, we can continue to collect the millions of pounds of material that Recycle Utah diverts.
Well, and that's what I'm wondering. I mean, how is that going to impact what goes on at the center? Are you going to need to start backing off of the materials that you take, especially like the cardboard and styrofoam, which are so bulky?
Yeah, we still need to work on the precise time frame, but to give you a sense, and I don't want to overspeak here until I've had a chance to talk with our staff in detail, but if we do indeed want to fully leave the facility by next September 2026, we'll probably stop collecting materials sometime during the summer to give us some time to process what we have and properly dispose of it. So we'll be in operation for another year and change.
Okay. All right, anything else you can tell us about?
No, we've got some exciting events coming up,
okay.
If I can talk about those now.
It's Earth Day coming
so
up.
It's Earth Month at Recycle Utah in April. So we have a whole roster of events. I'll highlight five of them here for you. First, Trivia Night will be April 15th at the Park City Brewer down in Kimball Junction. Mm. We have our special Earth Month edition of Green Drinks at Fulfilled on the 17th of April. And please, as usual, register for that online. There's a sustainability workshop, which we're conducting at the Park City Library in conjunction with Summit Community Gardens Eats. That's on April 23rd. And then the two big events for us, our annual Earth Day celebration, which once again this year will be at Twisted Fern, thanks to Adam Ross. And that is on April 22nd. Tickets are required and are currently being sold on our website. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, our semi-annual Household Hazardous Waste Day will be on April 26th from 9 to 1. We've been lucky for many years that Park City Mountain Resort has kindly hosted that event for us at the Cabriolet Lot down at the Canyons Village. This year it will not be held there. There's construction going on at the lot, so Park City Mountain has kindly offered us the use of their Silver King lot, which is at the Park City base this year. So please go to our website for details on materials we'll be collecting there, and please note that we are at a different site this year.
Okay. All right. And again, you do need to register for the green drinks.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Anything else, Jim, you want to mention?
No. Thanks, Leslie. Great to be here on a beautiful morning.
All right. Jim Bedell, again, is the general manager of Recycle Utah. And a couple of events happening tonight. The Mountain Mediation Center offering another free Let's Talk training. It's an opportunity to become more confident while discussing difficult topics. It was Park City Class Leadership Class 29 that developed the Let's Talk training as its class project. Class member Virginia Solomon says, with so much divisiveness in our world, learning to talk to each other, but more importantly, listening to each other, could help solve some of our difficult problems.
The hope is that you have a better understanding, a kind of better self-awareness of what it feels like in your body when you start to get triggered and get in a headspace that takes you out of the skill sets that we're working on in the training, learning how to actively listen, learning the importance of finding common ground when you're talking about difficult conversations, and then kind of learning how to put it together and communicate to connect through storytelling.
The Let's Talk training will be held tonight at the Jeremy Ranch Elementary School Community Center from 6 to 8 p.m. Four modules, including self-awareness, active listening, finding common ground, and communicating to connect, will be covered. Chris Campbell, Program Director for Mountain Mediation Center, says they continue to train about 300 people every year. And coming up next month, April 7th, will be the new Let's Talk Chats, which will help people who have taken this training to come back for more practice. Again, Let's Talk Chats will be held on the first Monday of each month in the community room at Park City Library from noon to 1 p.m. Both the training and the chats are free to attend. However, registration is required. You can find that link online at kpcw.org. And the Song Summit Foundation is hosting the official launch of the Summit Rising program tonight. A successful initiative could bring as many as 50 youth to this year's Song Summit. The foundation hopes to raise $100,000 to launch the Summit Rising program. It's designed for emerging artists between the ages of 14 and 22 from around the world. President of the Foundation Board of Trustees, Ellen Silver, says they're looking to build community for youth musicians and to expand their horizons to pursue their art.
For the last 2 years at the Song Summit, we have partnered with other groups to bring youth from New Orleans and from Cuba to the Song Summit and give them the opportunity to interact with one another, with the musicians, to attend workshops, to perform. And this year, we're expanding to include local youth. We hope up to 50 kids, and they will really have an immersive experience.
Silver says that Utah singer-songwriter Tara Shoup has been invited to perform and speak tonight about the impact that music has on youth and their mental health.
What we're doing is trying to raise money to help us support these youth and bring them here. And we want this to be an experience for them that's free of charge. And in order to do that, we need about $2,000 a youth, and that pays for their lodging, their food, instrument rental if they need it, and their travel.
Pizza will be provided at tonight's fundraiser. There will be a cash bar to purchase beer and other beverages. The event takes place from 5 to 7 p.m. at Offset Beer Brewery on Bonanza Drive. To make sure there is enough pizza, they're asking those who plan to attend to register. You can find that email online at kpcw.org.